video screens and speakers. The San Francisco police had given the go-ahead to prevent a riot. I could feel Louis' mounting anxiety. A pack of youngsters broke through the police lines and pressed themselves against his window as the motorcade made its sharp turn and ploughed on towards the long, ugly, tube-shaped hall. I was positively enthralled with what was happening, and the recklessness in me was cresting. Again and again the fans surrounded the car before they were swept back, and I was beginning to understand how woefully I had underestimated this entire experience. The filmed rock shows I'd watched hadn't prepared me for the crude electricity that was already coursing through me, the way the music was already surging in my head, the way the shame for my mortal vanity was evaporating. It was mayhem getting into the hall. Through a crush of guards, we ran into the heavily secured backstage area. Tough Cookie holding tight to me, Alex pushing Larry ahead of him. The fans tore at our hair, our capes. I reached back and gathered Louis under my wing and brought him through the doors with us. And then in the curtained dressing rooms I heard it for the first time. The bestial sound of the crowd. 15,000 souls chanting and screaming under one roof. No, I did not have this under control, this fierce glee that made my entire body shudder. When had this ever happened to me before? This near hilarity. I pushed up to the front and looked through the peephole into the auditorium. Mortals on both sides of the long oval, up to the very rafters. And in the vast, open center, a mob of thousands dancing, caressing, pumping fists into the smoky haze, vying to get close to the stage platform. Hashish, beer, human blood smell swirled on the ventilation currents. The engineers were shouting that we were set. Face paint had been retouched, black velvet capes brushed, black ties straightened. No good to keep this crowd waiting a moment longer. The word was given to kill the house lights, and a great inhuman cry swelled in the darkness, rolling up the walls. I could feel it in the floor beneath me. It grew stronger as a grinding electronic buzz announced the connection of the equipment. The vibration went through my temples. A layer of skin was being peeled off. I clasped Louis's arm, gave him a lingering kiss, and then felt him release me. Everywhere beyond the curtain people snapped on their little chemical cigarette lighters, until thousands and thousands of tiny flames trembled in the gloom. Rhythmic clapping erupted, died out. The general roar rolling up and down, pierced by random shrieks. My head was teeming. And yet I thought of Renault's, so long ago. I positively saw it. But this place was like the Roman Colosseum, and making the tapes, the films, it had been so controlled, so cold. It had given no taste of this. The engineer gave the signal, and we shot through the curtain, the mortals fumbling because they couldn't see as I maneuvered effortlessly over the cables and wires. I was at the lip of the stage, right over the heads of the swaying, shouting crowd. Alex was at the drums. Tough Cookie had her flat, shimmering electric guitar in hand. Larry was at the huge, circular keyboard of the synthesizer. I turned around and glanced up at the giant video screens, which would magnify our images for the scrutiny of every pair of eyes in the house, then back at the sea of screaming youngsters. Waves and waves of noise inundated us from the darkness. I could smell the heat and the blood. Then the immense bank of overhead lights went on. Violent beams of silver, blue, red, crisscrossed as they caught us, and the screaming reached an unbelievable pitch. The entire hall was on its feet. I could feel delight crawling on my white skin, exploding in my yellow hair. I glanced around to see my mortals glorified and frenzied already as they perched amid the endless wires and silver scaffolding. The sweat broke out on my forehead as I saw the fists raised everywhere in salute, and scattered all through the hall were youngsters in their Halloween vampire clothes, faces gleaming with artificial blood, some wearing floppy yellow wigs, some with black rings about their eyes to make them all the more innocent and ghastly. Catcalls and hoots and raucous cries rose above the general din. No, this was not like making the little films. This was nothing like singing in the air-cooled, cork-lined chambers of the studio. This was a human experience made vampiric, as the music itself was vampiric, as the images of the video film were the images of the blood swoon. I was shuddering with pure exhilaration, and the red-tinged sweat was pouring down my face. The spotlights swept the audience, leaving us bathed in a mercuric twilight, and everywhere the light hit, the crowd went into convulsions, redoubling their cries. What was it about this sound? It signaled man turned into mob. The crowds surrounding the guillotine, the ancient Romans screaming for Christian blood, and the Celtoi gathered in the grove awaiting Marius the god. I could see the grove as I had when Marius told the tale. Had the torches been any more lurid than these colored beams? Had the horrific wicker giants been larger than these steel ladders that held the banks of speakers and incandescent spotlights on either side of us? But there was no violence here. There was no death. Only this childish exuberance pouring forth from young mouths and young bodies, an energy focused and contained as naturally as it was cut loose. Another wave of hashish from the front ranks, long-haired leather-clad bikers with spoked leather bracelets clapping their hands above their heads, ghosts of the Celtoi, they seemed, barbarian locks streaming. And from all corners of this long, hollow, smoky place, an uninhibited wash of something that felt like love. The lights were flashing on and off so that the movement of the crowd seemed fragmented, to be happening in fits and jerks. They were chanting in unison, now the volume swelling. What was it? Lestat! 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 Oh, this is too divine! What mortal could withstand this indulgence, this worship? I clasped the ends of my black cloak, which was the signal. I shook out my hair to its fullest, and these gestures sent a current of renewed screaming to the very back of the hall. The lights converged on the stage. I raised my cloak on either side like bat wings. The screams fused into a great, monolithic roar. "I am the vampire Lestat!" I shouted at the top of my lungs as I stepped way back from the microphone, and the sound was almost visible as it arched over the length of the oval theatre, and the voice of the crowd rose even higher, louder, as if to devour the ringing sound. "Come on! Let me hear you! You love me!" I shouted suddenly, without deciding to do it. Everywhere people were stomping. They were stomping not only on the concrete floors, but on the wooden seats. "How many of you would be vampires?" The roar became a thunder. Several people were trying to scramble up onto the front of the stage, the bodyguards pulling them off. One of the big, dark, shaggy-haired bikers was jumping straight up and down, a beer can in each hand. The lights went brighter, like the glare of an explosion, and there rose from the speakers and equipment behind me the full-throated engine of a locomotive at stultifying volume, as if the train were racing onto the stage. Every other sound in the auditorium was swallowed by it. In blaring silence, the crowd danced and bobbed before me. Then came the piercing, twanging fury of the electric guitar. The drums boomed into a marching cadence, and the grinding locomotive sound of the synthesizer crested, then broke into a bubbling cauldron of noise in time with the march. It was time to begin the chant in the minor key, its puerile lyrics leaping over the accompaniment. "I am the vampire Lestat. You are here for the grand sabbat, but I pity you, your lot." I grabbed the microphone from the stand and ran to one side of the stage and then to the other, the cape flaring out behind me. "You can't resist the lords of the night. They have no mercy on your plight. In your fear they take delight." They were reaching out for my ankles, throwing kisses, girls lifted by their male companions to touch my cape as it swirled over their heads. "Yet in love we will take you, and in rapture we'll break you, and in death we'll release you. No one can say you were not warned." Tough Cookie, strumming furiously, danced up beside me, gyrating wildly, the music peaking in a shrill glissando, drums and cymbals crashing, the bubbling cauldron of the synthesizer rising again. I felt the music come up into my bones. Not even at the old Roman Sabbat had it taken hold of me like this. I pitched myself into the dance, swinging my hips elastically, then pumping them as the two of us moved towards the edge of the stage. We were performing the free and erotic contortions of Punchinello and Harlequin, and all the old Commedia players, improvising now as they had done, the instruments cutting loose from the thin melody, then finding it again, as we urged each other on with our dancing, nothing rehearsed, everything within character, everything utterly new. The guards shoved people back roughly as they tried to join us. Yet we danced over the edge of the platform as if taunting them, whipping our hair around our faces, turning round to see ourselves above in an impossible hallucination on the giant screens. The sound travelled up through my body as I turned back to the crowd. It travelled like a steel ball, finding one pocket after another in my hips, my shoulders, until I knew I was rising off the floor in a great slow leap, and then descending silently again, the black cape flaring, my mouth open to reveal the fang teeth. Euphoria. Deafening applause. And everywhere I saw pale mortal throats bared, boys and girls shoving their collars down and stretching their necks. And they were gesturing to me to come and take them, inviting me and begging me, and some of the girls were crying. The blood scent was thick as the smoke in the air. Flesh and flesh and flesh. And yet everywhere the canny innocence, the unfathomable trust that it was art, nothing but art. No one would be hurt. It was safe, this splendid hysteria. When I screamed, they thought it was the sound system. When I leapt, they thought it was a trick. And why not? When magic was blaring at them from all sides and they could forsake our flesh and blood for the great glowing giants on the screens above us. Marius, I wish you could behold this. Gabriel, where are you? The lyrics poured out, sung by the whole band again in unison, Tough Cookie's lovely soprano soaring over the others, before she wrung her head round and round in a circle, her hair flopping down to touch the boards in front of her feet, her guitar jerking lasciviously like a giant phallus, thousands and thousands stamping and clapping in unison. I am telling you I am a vampire! I screamed suddenly. Ecstasy, delirium. I am evil! Evil! Yes, 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 yes! I threw out my arms, my hands curved upwards. I want to drink up your souls! The big woolly-haired biker in the black leather jacket backed up, knocking over those behind him, and leapt on the stage next to me, fists over his head. The bodyguards went to tackle him, but I had him, locking him to my chest, lifting him off his feet in one arm, and closing my mouth on his neck, teeth just touching him, just touching that geyser of blood ready to spew straight upwards. But they had torn him loose, thrown him back like a fish into the sea. Tough Cookie was beside me, the light skittering on her black satin pants, her whirling cape, her arm out to steady me even as I tried to slip free. Now I knew all that had been left out of the pages I had read about the rock singers. This mad marriage of the primitive and the scientific, this religious frenzy. We were in the ancient grove, all right. We were all with the gods. And we were blowing out the fuses on the first song, and rolling into the next as the crowd picked up the rhythm, shouting the lyrics they knew from the albums and the clips. Tough Cookie and I sang, stomping in time with it. Children of darkness meet the children of light. Children of man fight the children of night. And again they cheered and bellowed and wailed, unmindful of the words. Could the old Celtoi have cut loose with lusty ululations on the verge of massacre? But again there was no massacre. There was no burnt offering. Passion rolled towards the images of evil, not evil. Passion embraced the image of death, not death. I could feel it like the scalding illumination on the pores of my skin, in the roots of my hair. Tough Cookie's amplified scream carrying the next stanza, my eyes sweeping the farthest nooks and crannies, the amphitheater become a great wailing soul. Deliver me from this, deliver me from loving it, deliver me from forgetting everything else and sacrificing all purpose, all resolve to it. I want you, my babies. I want your blood, innocent blood. I want your adoration at the moment when I sink my teeth. Yes, this is beyond all temptation. But in this moment of precious stillness and shame, I saw them for the first time. The real ones out there. Tiny white faces tossed like masks on the waves of shapeless mortal faces, distinct as Magnus's face had been in that long-ago little boulevard hall. And I knew that back beyond the curtains, Louis also saw them. What all I saw in them, all I felt emanating from them, was wonder and fear. "All you real vampires out there!" I shouted. "Reveal yourselves!" And they remained changeless, as the painted and costumed mortals about them went wild. For 3 solid hours we danced, we sang. We beat the hell out of the metallic instruments, the whiskey splashing back and forth among Alex and Larry and Tough Cookie, the crowd surging towards us over and over until the phalanx of police had doubled and the lights had been raised. Wooden seats were breaking in the high corners of the auditorium. Cans rolled on the concrete floors. The real ones never ventured a step closer. Some vanished. That's how it was. Unbroken screaming like 15,000 drunks on the town, right up to the final moments when it was the ballad from the last clip, Age of Innocence. And then the music softening, the drums rolling out and the guitar dying and the synthesizer throwing up the lovely translucent notes of an electric harpsichord, notes so light yet profuse that it was as if the air were showered with gold. One mellow spot hit the place where I stood, my clothes streaked with blood sweat, my hair wet with it and tangled, the cape dangling from one shoulder. Into a great yawning mouth of rapt and drunken attention I raised my voice slowly, letting each phrase become clear. This is the age of innocence, true innocence. All your demons are visible, all your demons are material. Call them pain, call them hunger, call them war. Mythic evil you don't need any more. Drive out the vampires and the devils with the gods you no longer adore. Remember, the man with the fangs wears a cloak. What passes for charm is a charm. Understand what you see when you see me. Kill us, my brothers and sisters, the war is on. Understand what you see when you see me. I closed my eyes on the rising walls of applause. What were they really clapping for? What were they celebrating? Electric daylight in this giant auditorium. The real ones were vanishing in the shifting throng. The uniformed police had jumped up onto the platform to make a solid row in front of us. Alex was tugging at me as we went through the curtain.
"Man, we have to run for it. They've got the damned limo surrounded, and you'll never make it to your own car."
I said no, they had to go on, to take the limo, to get going now. And to my left I saw the hard, white face of one of the real ones as he shoved his way through the press. He wore the black leather skins of the motorcycle riders, his silken preternatural hair a gleaming black mop. The curtains were ripping from their overhead rods, letting the house flow into the backstage area. Louis was beside me. I saw another immortal on my right. A thin, grinning male with tiny, dark eyes. Blast of cold air as we pushed into the parking lot, and pandemonium of squirming, struggling mortals, the police yelling for order, the limo rocking like a boat as Tough Cookie and Alex and Larry were shoved into it. One of the bodyguards had the engine of the Porsche running for me, but the youngsters were beating on the hood and the roof as if it were a drum. Behind the black-haired vampire male there appeared another demon, a woman, and the pair were pushing inexorably closer. What the hell did they think they were going to do? The giant motor of the limousine was growling like a lion at the children who wouldn't make way for it, and the motorcycle guards gunned their little engines, spewing fumes and noise into the throng. The vampire trio was suddenly surrounding the Porsche. The tall male's face ugly with fury, and one thrust of his powerful arm lifted the low-slung car in spite of the youngsters who held to it. It was going to capsize. I felt an arm around my throat suddenly, and I felt Louis's body pivot, and I heard the sound of his fist strike the preternatural skin and bone behind me, heard the whispered curse. Mortals everywhere were suddenly screaming. A policeman exhorted the crowd over a loudspeaker to clear out. I rushed forward, knocking down several of the youngsters, and steadied the Porsche just before it went over like a scarab on its back. As I struggled to open the door, I felt the crowd crushing against me. Any moment this would become a riot. There would be a stampede. Whistles, screams, sirens, bodies shoving Louis and me together, and then the leather-clad vampire male rising on the other side of the Porsche, a great silver scythe flashing in the floodlights as he swung it over his head. I heard Louis shout of warning. I saw another scythe gleaming in the corner of my eye. But a preternatural screech cut through the cacophony as in a blinding flash. The vampire male burst into flames. Another blaze exploded beside me. The scythe clattered to the concrete. And yards away, yet another vampiric figure suddenly went up in a crackling gust. The crowd was in utter panic, rushing back into the auditorium, streaming out into the parking lot, running any place it could to escape the whirling figures as they were burnt black in their own private infernos, their limbs melting in the heat to mere bones. And I saw other immortals streaking away at invisible speed through the sluggish human press. Louis was stunned as he turned to me, and surely the look of amazement on my face only stunned him more. Neither of us had done this. Neither of us had the power. I knew but one immortal who did. But I was suddenly slammed back by the car door opening, and a small delicate white hand reached out to pull me inside.
"Hurry, both of you," said a female voice in French suddenly. "What are you waiting for? The church to pronounce it a miracle?"
And I was jerked into the leather bucket seat before I realized what was happening, dragging Louis in on top of me so that he had to scramble over me into the compartment in back. The Porsche lurched forward, scattering the fleeing mortals in front of its headlights. I stared at the slender figure of the driver beside me, her yellow hair streaming over her shoulders, her soiled felt hat smashed down over her eyes. I wanted to throw my arms around her, to crush her with kisses, to press my heart against her heart and forget absolutely everything else. The hell with these idiot fledglings! But the Porsche almost went over again as she made the sharp right out of the gate and into the busy street.
"Gabrielle, stop!"
I shouted, my hand closing on her arm.
"You didn't do that, burn them like that!"
"Of course not," she said, in sharp French still, merely glancing at me. She looked irresistible as with two fingers she twisted the wheel again, swinging us into yet another 90-degree turn. We were headed for the freeway.
"Then you're driving us away from Marius," I said. "Stop!"
"So let him blow up the van that's following us," she cried.
"Then I'll stop."
She had the gas pedal floored, her eyes fixed on the road in front of her, her hands locked to the leather-clad wheel. I turned to see it over Louis's shoulder, a monster of a vehicle bearing down with surprising speed, an overgrown hearse, it seemed, hulking and black, with a mouthful of chromium teeth across the snub-nosed front and four of the undead leering at us from behind the tinted windshield glass.
"We can't get clear of this traffic to outrun them," I said. "Turn around. Go back to the auditorium. Gabrielle, turn around."
But she bore on, weaving in and out of the motor coaches wildly, driving some of them in sheer panic to the side. The van was gaining.
"It's a war machine, that's what it is," Louis said. "They've rigged it with an iron bumper. They're going to try to ram us, the little monsters."
Oh, I had played this one wrong. I had underestimated. I had envisioned my own resources in this modern age, but not theirs. And we were moving farther and farther away from the one immortal who could blow them to kingdom come. Well, I would handle them with pleasure. I'd smash their windshield to pieces, for starters, then tear off their heads one by one. I opened the window, climbing halfway up and out of it, the wind whipping my hair as I glared at them, their ugly white faces behind the glass. As we shot up the freeway ramp, they were almost on top of us. Good. Just a little closer and I would spring. But our car was skidding to a halt. Gabrielle couldn't clear the path ahead.
"Hold on! It's coming!" she screamed.
"Like hell it is," I shouted, and in an instant I would have jumped off the roof and gone into them like a battering ram, but I didn't have that instant. They had struck us full force, and my body flew up in the air, diving over the side of the freeway as the Porsche shot out in front of me, sailing into space. I saw Gabrielle break through the side door before the car hit the ground, and she and I were both rolling over on the grassy slope as the car capsized and exploded with a deafening roar.
"Louis!"
I shouted. I scrambled towards the blaze. I would have gone right into it after him, but the glass of the back portal splintered as he came through it. He hit the embankment just as I reached him, and with my cape I beat at his smoking garments, Gabrielle ripping off her jacket to do the same. The van had stopped at the freeway railing high above. The creatures were dropping over the edge like big white insects, and landing on their feet on the slope. And I was ready for them. But again, as the first one skidded down towards us, scythe raised, there came that ghastly preternatural scream again, and the blinding combustion, the creature's face a black mask in a riot of orange flame, the body convulsed in a horrid dance. The others turned and ran under the freeway. I started after them, but Gabrielle had her arms around me and wouldn't let me go. Her strength maddened me and amazed me.
"Stop, damn it!" she said. "Louis, help me!"
"Let me loose," I said furiously. "I want one of them, just one of them. I can get the hindmost in the back." But she wouldn't release me, and I certainly wasn't going to fight her, and Louis had joined with her in her angry and desperate entreaties.
"Lestat, don't go after them," he said, his polite manner strained to the fullest. "We've had quite enough. We must leave here now."
"All right," I said, giving it up resentfully. Besides, it was too late. The burnt one had expired in smoke and sputtering flames, and the others were gone into silence and darkness without a trace. The night around us was suddenly empty, except for the thunder of the freeway traffic high above. And there we were, the three of us, standing together in the lurid glaze of the blazing car. Louis wiped the soot from his face wearily, his stiff white shirt front smudged, his long velvet opera cape burnt and torn. And there was Gabrielle, the waif just as she'd been so long ago, the dusty, ragged boy in frayed khaki jungle jacket and pants, the squashed brown felt hat askew on her lovely head. Out of the cacophony of city noises we heard the thin whine of sirens approaching. Yet we stood motionless, the three of us, waiting, glancing to one another. And I knew we were all scanning for Marius. Surely it was Marius, it had to be. And he was with us, not against us. And he would answer us now. I said his name aloud, softly. I peered into the dark under the freeway, and out over the endless army of little houses that crowded the surrounding slopes. But all I could hear were the sirens growing louder, and the murmur of human voices as mortals began the long climb from the boulevard below. I saw fear in Gabrielle's face. I reached out for her, went towards her. In spite of all the hideous confusion, the mortals coming nearer and nearer, the vehicles stopped on the freeway above. Her embrace was sudden, warm, but she gestured for me to hurry.
"We're in danger, all of us," she whispered. "Terrible danger. Come!"
3. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and I stood alone at the glass doors of the Carmel Valley ranch house. Gabrielle and Louis had gone into the hills together to find their rest. A phone call north had told me that my mortal musicians were safe in the new Sonoma hideaway, partying madly behind electric fences and gates. As for the police and the press and all their inevitable questions, well, that would have to wait. And now I waited alone for the morning light, as I'd always done, wondering why Marius hadn't shown himself, why he had saved us, only to vanish without a word.
"And suppose it wasn't Marius,"
Gabrielle had said anxiously as she paced the floor afterwards.
"I tell you, I felt an overwhelming sense of menace. I felt danger to us as well as to them. I felt it outside the auditorium when I drove away. I felt it when we stood by the burning car. Something about it. It wasn't Marius, I'm convinced."
"Something almost barbaric about it," Louis had said. "Almost, but not quite."
"Yes, almost savage," she had answered, glancing to him in acknowledgement. "And even if it was Marius, what makes you think he didn't save you so that he could take his private vengeance in his own way?"
"No," I had said, laughing softly. "Marius doesn't want revenge, or he would already have it. That much I know." But I had been too excited just watching her. The old walk, the old gestures, and, ah, the frayed safari clothing. After 200 years, she was still the intrepid explorer. She straddled the chair like a cowboy when she sat down, resting her chin on her hands on the high back. We had so much to talk about, to tell each other, and I was simply too happy to be afraid. And besides, being afraid was too awful, because I knew now I had made another serious miscalculation. I'd realized it for the first time when the Porsche exploded with Louis still inside it. This little war of mine would put all those I loved in danger. What a fool I'd been to think I could draw the venom to myself. We had to talk, all right. We had to be cunning. We had to take great care. But for now we were safe. I told her that, soothingly. She and Louis didn't feel the menace here. It had not followed us to the valley, and I had never felt it. And our young and foolish immortal enemies had scattered, believing that we possessed the power to incinerate them at will.
"You know, a thousand times I pictured our reunion," Gabrielle said, "and never once was it anything like this."
"I rather think it went splendidly," I said, "and don't suppose for a moment that I couldn't have gotten us out of it. I was about to throttle that one with a scythe, toss him over the auditorium, but I saw the other one coming. I could have broken him in half. I tell you, one of the frustrating things about all this is I didn't get the chance."
"You, monsieur, are an absolute imp," she said. "You are impossible. You are, what did Marius himself call you? The damnedest creature. I am in full accord."
I laughed delightedly. Such sweet flattery. And how lovely the old-fashioned French. And Louis had been so taken with her, sitting back in the shadows as he watched her, reticent, musing as he'd always been. Immaculate he was again, as if his garments were entirely at his command. And we'd just come from the last act of La Traviata to watch the mortals drink their champagne at the marble-top café tables as the fashionable carriages clattered past. Feeling of the new coven formed, magnificent energy, the denial of the human reality, the three of us together against all tribes, all worlds, and a profound feeling of safety, of unstoppable momentum. How to explain that to them? "Mother, stop worrying," I had said finally, hoping to settle it all, to create a moment of pure equanimity. "It's pointless. A creature powerful enough to burn his enemies can find us any time that he chooses, do exactly what he likes."
"And this should stop me from worrying?" she said.
I saw Louis shake his head. "I don't have your powers," he said unobtrusively. "Nevertheless, I felt this thing. And I tell you it was alien, utterly uncivilized, for want of a better word."
"Ah, you've hit it again," Gabrielle interjected. "It was completely foreign, as if coming from a being so removed."
"And your Marius is too civilized," Louis insisted, "too burdened with philosophy. That's why you know he doesn't want revenge."
"Alien? Uncivilized?" I glanced at both of them. "Why didn't I feel this menace?" I asked. "Mon Dieu, it could have been anything," Gabrielle had said finally. "That music of yours could wake the dead."
I had thought of last night's enigmatic message. Lestat, danger. But it had been too close to dawn for me to worry them with it. And besides, it explained nothing. It was merely another fragment of the puzzle, and one perhaps that did not belong at all. And now they were gone together, and I was standing alone before the glass doors, watching the gleam of light glow brighter and brighter over the Santa Lucia mountains, thinking, "Where are you, Marius? Why the hell don't you reveal yourself?" It could damn well be true, everything that Gabrielle said. "Is it a game to you?" And was it a game to me that I didn't really call out to him? I mean, raise my secret voice with its full power, as he had told me 2 centuries ago that I might do. Through all my struggles, it had become such a matter of pride not to call to him, but what did that pride matter now? Maybe it was the call he required of me. Maybe he was demanding that call. All the old bitterness and stubbornness were gone from me now. Why not make that effort, at least? And closing my eyes, I did what I had not done since those old 18th-century nights when I talked to him aloud in the streets of Cairo or Rome. Silently I called, and I felt the voiceless cry rising out of me and travelling into oblivion. I could almost feel it traverse the world of visible proportions, feel it grow fainter and fainter, feel it burn out. And there it was again for a split second, the distant, unrecognizable place I had glimpsed last night. Snow. Endless snow, and some sort of stone dwelling, windows encrusted with ice. And on a high promontory, a curious modern apparatus, a great grey metal dish turning on an axis to draw to itself the invisible waves that crisscross the earth skies. Television antenna, reaching from this snowy waste to the satellite. That is what it was. And the broken glass on the floor was the glass of a television screen. I saw it. Stone bench. A broken television screen. Noise. Fading.
Marius!
Danger, Lestat. All of us in danger. She has... I cannot... Ice. Buried in ice.
Flash of shattered glass on a stone floor. The bench empty. The clang and vibration of the vampire Lestat throbbing from the speakers.
She has... Lestat, help me! All of us! Danger! She has...
Silence. The connection broken.
Marius!
Something but too faint. For all its intensity, simply too faint.
Marius!
I was leaning against the window, staring right into the morning light as it grew brighter, my eyes watering, the tips of my fingers almost burning on the hot glass.
Answer me. Is it Akasha? Are you telling me that it is Akasha, that she is the one, that it was she?
But the sun was rising over the mountains. The lethal rays were spilling down into the valley, ranging across the valley floor. I ran out of the house, across the field and towards the hills, my arm up to shield my eyes. And within moments I had reached my hidden underground crypt, pulled back the stone, and I went down the crudely dug little stairs. One more turn, and then another, and I was in cold and safe blackness, earth smell, and I lay on the mud floor of the tiny chamber, my heart thudding, my limbs trembling.
Akasha,
that music of yours could wake the dead.
Television set in the chamber, of course.
Marius had given them that and the broadcasts right off the satellite. They had seen the video films. I knew it. I knew it as certainly as if he had spelled it out to the last detail. He had brought the television down into their sanctum, just as he had brought the movies to them years and years ago. And she had been awakened. She had risen.
That music of yours could wake the dead.
I'd done it again.
Oh, if only I could keep my eyes open, could only think, if the sun wasn't rising.
She had been there in San Francisco. She had been that close to us, burning our enemies.
Alien, utterly foreign.
Yes. But not uncivilized, no, not savage. She was not that. She was only just reawakened, my goddess, risen like a magnificent butterfly from its cocoon. And what was the world to her? How had she come to us? What was the state of her mind? Danger to all of us. No, I don't believe it. She had slain our enemies. She had come to us.
But I couldn't fight the drowsiness and heaviness any longer. Pure sensation was driving out all wonder and excitement. My body grew limp and helplessly still against the earth.
And then I felt a hand suddenly close on mine. Cold as marble it was, and just about that strong. My eyes snapped open in the darkness. The hand tightened its grip, A great mass of silken hair brushed my face. A cold arm moved across my chest. "Oh, please, my darling, my beautiful one, please," I wanted to say. But my eyes were closing. My lips wouldn't move. I was losing consciousness. The sun had risen above.
The Vampire Chronicles will continue.
This is Simon Vance. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Vampire Lestat, Book 2 of The Vampire Chronicles, by Anne Rice. Executive Producer Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 1985 by Anne O'Brien Rice. Production copyright 2011, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.